You're listening to Seeking Office, the Vancouver Municipal Election Podcast. Hello, my name's Alex DeBoer. There's 1 week until Vancouver's 2018 election. And as you plan which names to check on our unusually long ballot, you might turn to polling information for guidance. This year, there are a number of polls floating around online, some of them put out by political parties themselves, others by the notably more credible Research Co., a Vancouver-based polling company. And as Election Day draws closer, it's the race for mayor that commands the most media attention, and perhaps the most consideration by voters. According to poll results released on October 9th by Research Co., the person leading this race is independent mayoral candidate Kennedy Stewart, with 34% of decided voters choosing him to become Vancouver's next mayor. The NPA's Ken Sim is behind Stewart, with support from 20% of decided voters, and independent candidate Shauna Sylvester is in third with 16%. Georgia Strait editor and journalist Charlie Smith wrote in an op-ed earlier this week that polls are being used to push people to vote for Stewart. What Smith means is that because Ken Sim is in second, and because he's running with the NPA, which is a center-right party, voters debating between supporting Kennedy Stewart or Shauna Sylvester might vote for Stewart solely to prevent Ken Sim from becoming mayor. And while Stewart and Sylvester are both center-left candidates, there are differences between them, including Sylvester's more progressive housing policies. So is Charlie Smith right that polls are shaping Vancouver's 2018 election? Or are the polls merely an accurate and benign reflection on voter preference? I spoke with UBC political science professor Richard Johnston to find out.
My name is Richard Johnston. I'm a professor of political science at UBC Vancouver.
So, polls that have been done during Vancouver's 2018 election period, which have primarily been done by Research Co., have placed independent mayoral candidate Kennedy Stewart in the lead among decided voters. And the Georgia Strait's Charlie Smith recently wrote an article which discussed how these polls may be scaring people away from voting for Vancouver's other progressive mayoral candidate, Shauna Sylvester. So from the perspective of someone who is specialized in political science, can you comment on whether or not Charlie Smith's theory that people might be voting for Kennedy Stewart out of fear, whether that's possible?
I don't think fear is the word exactly. And I don't know that Charlie really means that. But if people are looking for a signal about who on the left side of the spectrum to support, given that there's there's more than one candidate, then poll information is potentially strategically useful information. It suggests where you need to coordinate in order to be most effective. Of course, that raises the question of whether the poll is any good, but in the absence of other information, it's something to go on.
Right. And why do you say that you don't think people would be voting out of fear particularly?
Well, if by fear he means concern that by voting for Sylvester, people will be worried that they're splitting the vote on the left and thus facilitating a victory by somebody on the right. So it's fear of what in academic terms we would call coordination failure. I don't know that it's necessarily fear in the sense of, fear and loathing, anxiety for one's soul and that sort of thing.
Yes, good point. Fear might be a bit hyperbolic of a word choice.
Yes.
So there have been a lot of online polls done during this election cycle. Some parties have been putting out their own polls, for example. Mm-hmm. How can people in Vancouver know if a poll or pollster is credible?
One thing you want to do is ask yourself whether indeed it is a poll that's being put out by a party. Parties will put out polls that are favorable to themselves in general and suppress others. So that's an issue. At the end of the day, this is a sort of task that really falls on the journalistic community, right? In the sense that they should not report polls as gospel all by themselves, but instead should investigate the sources of the poll. And if they can't track down a website, can't track down some kind of report on the features of the poll, they should consider not publicizing it, but at a minimum, publicizing it in a way that raises questions about its provenance. But I think that individual voters are going to really struggle to do this.
Right. And then I was also wondering about the difference between public polling, so polling conducted by our own government, and how that might be better at compiling credible election stats and maybe communicating those to voters than private pollsters. Do you think if we had public polls, there would be less confusion over what is credible information?
Not necessarily. I think, first of all, it's not clear to me that the government has more credibility than private sources as such. I think the key, frankly, is that there be more than one poll, that the polls be conducted by different outfits, and that there be reasonable clarity about the nature of the poll, about what its mode is, for example, online versus telephone, something about its sampling frame, if there is one, something about the online panel, if that's what it is. It would be good to know what the question is, how representative the sample is of the population, and whether there are other questions that might have led voters towards one direction or another on the vote intention question. So really what we should be looking for is information about polls gathered by entities that are not themselves the initiator or the sponsor of the poll, but who can compile basically a log of information about all the polls that are published.
And in this 2018 Vancouver election, do you think that there have been enough polls? Because I've only really been referring to polls from Research Co.
I would say there have not been enough. I can't say that I have much sense beyond that particular poll of anything. My intuition all along has been Stewart is likely the front runner, if only because he was one of the earliest to declare, and he already was a public figure with experience in electoral politics. But that was a surmise based on just the situation and the person, not on any poll information. There is a sort of mantra of disliking polls, but the only antidote to a poll you don't like is another poll.
Right. Well, and with Research Co. being kind of the only company most people know who are putting out credible polls in this 2018 election, do you think they're doing a good job of explaining their methodology, like the specific questions they're asking and how they're getting their information?
I can't say. I cannot recall to mind detail from a news story, and I haven't actually gone onto a website to see what they say. What I would say is that in general, I would say that the description of polls by Canadian polling outfits these days is actually pretty dismal. I've been kind of keeping track of polls on federal vote intention and putting them through some analyses. But what I'm struck by is that we don't seem to be taking very seriously the reporting requirements for polls, at least in the press. You can always find a press release, but even the press release is not always as informative as I would like.
Right. So you're saying the press isn't doing as good a job as it could of giving the details about the poll itself?
Some of it's the press, but also I'm not struck that the polling firms are as forthright as they might be about their methods either.
Right. And so I guess the fear is that it's so important the way you ask a question that if it's phrased in a different way, it could totally change people's responses.
So, yes, we know that questions and answers are not unrelated. How related they are depends on how crystallized the opinion is likely to be, how much, as it were, practice people have had at forming it. And so, for example, polls about federal elections, there's a fair amount of variation. On the other hand, most of the actors are familiar to people, familiar enough at least, so that they can at least give sort of ritual responses that broadly correspond to their long-term preferences. But when you're talking about an election like this one, where there's lots and lots of candidates, many of them are very new to the scene, right? We're having unprecedented turnover in municipal elections. So this is a situation in which opinions are likely not to have been crystallized. And so you could see that response would be shaped by considerations in the question that are not terribly germane to the choice, like whose name comes first or whose name comes last.
Right. And so by that same token, because there are so many new candidates running, so few incumbents in this election, wouldn't polls be more likely to affect undecided voters than they normally would be?
Yes. I mean, you're talking about a field of candidates, many of whom are simply unknown to the public. I mean, I couldn't name all of the mayoral candidates. I could probably name about half a dozen of them, but it'd take me, a minute or so to dredge them up. And I'm not a city politics person, I am a political scientist, and so I'm probably at the high end of the information continuum here.
You would think,
And then on top of that, that's just about questionnaires and questions. Then another thing is just what's the sample, and what's the mode? If it's an online mode, which is increasingly common, and it is largely the future of survey research, if it's an online mode, then people are reading a menu, right? Will all the candidates be on the menu? What will be their order? We know that, for example, when you have a visual mode, like an online questionnaire, there tends to be a bit of a privilege for the first name you see. Mm-hmm. With telephone polls, people are a little bit biased towards the last name they heard. And so an interesting question would be, have these names been randomized in either mode? So there's something.
Right. But so you're talking about all these differences between mediums of polling online versus phone, for example. So people tend to react differently to these different polling mediums. But is the difference crucial? Like, will it make a big difference enough that...
It can be. And it would be interesting to see just how many polls have been published by how many different firms and with what results. And to go back where you started from, we care about this stuff because, especially in these sort of what are really low information elections like municipal ones, people just don't know as much about them as they do about provincial or federal elections. And the choices are often more complex given the way we organize the council and so on. So that in these kind of low information situations, bits of information that seem to stand out, like the most recent poll, can be quite influential.
Right. Another interesting thing Charlie Smith brought up in that Georgia Strait article was the meaning of attack ads and how they reflect on internal polling done by parties. So so he said perhaps one way of knowing how a party has evaluated its competitors, how close they are in the race, is the type or amount of attack ads they're doing. Do you think that's a relevant way to kind of figure out how close parties are to one another in the race?
It absolutely is. Think about this. You've got an advertising budget. It's like an investment, right? You want to get the maximum return on your investment. That means you don't want to waste your money. So you do need to strategize about where the money is best spent. And in point of fact, even though attack ads can be unpleasant, they're generally speaking more informative than the others. You think about an advertisement that a candidate places about himself or herself. It's greatest thing since sliced bread, matinee idol good looks, competence, blah, 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 blah. It's all positives. And it's positives that are almost impossible to verify. They're just puffery. Whereas if you're actually going to attack an opponent, it helps if what you're saying is the truth, or at least an approximation to the truth, because there will be pushback if it's not, including from the media. So in the grand scheme of things, actually, negative advertising is both quite useful in figuring out where to put the candidates on the landscape, but it's also, from the point of view of interpretation of what's going on, a pretty good sense of who's worried about whom. And so that, that's a proxy for intelligence that they've gathered somewhere about this, and chances are that intelligence comes from a poll.
Right. And the party's internal polls are probably pretty accurate, do you think?
We'll never know because they don't release them, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the point is there's a strong incentive towards accuracy. Party campaigns tend to have shrewder, more inquisitive, more strategically minded people doing it. So they may be harder to BS them, but at the end of the day, they may not necessarily know what's really going on in the sausage factory either. but they're probably pretty well placed to ask the right questions. But I'll tell you, there is a tendency, we believe, you know, basically on the basis of anecdotes piled up over the years, there's some reason to think that parties do tilt their polling towards making themselves feel good, sometimes at the expense of their true predicament. For example, in 2012, there seems every reason to believe that the Republican pollsters in the U.S. really believed that Mitt Romney was going to win. They really did. And nobody else did. But they seem to have been genuinely surprised by the fact that he lost. Well, what led them to that? And I think that part of that is that there does tend to be, other things equal, a little bit of a tendency for polling firms to want to bring good news to their client. That said, I'd still trust a party poll as long as it's not made public.
Right.
My guessing is that their internal polling is actually pretty good.
Yeah. And I guess, like you said, you know, parties, their incentive is to get accurate polls so that they can, you know, win. It's to their advantage. But there is this chance of them inflating their own.
Yeah, nobody likes bad news.
Yeah.
You know, it's not entirely stupid. It's not, nor entirely kind of naive.
Mm-hmm.
You want your volunteers and you want your staffers to be enthusiastic, right? Mm-hmm. You want them to get out there and work for you and get up in the morning approaching their tasks with enthusiasm. What you don't want to do is cultivate a sense of inevitability and defeat in your own team. So, you know, you're not necessarily as explicit about this stuff in the semi-public conversation around the campaign. You might be very explicit in the kind of war room, so to speak, you know, the room where you're not allowed to bring your cell phone in, that sort of thing.
Right. That's very interesting. So considering what we've talked about today, I just wanted to ask this final question. So polls, depending on how they're done, can produce different results if they're done by phone or by internet survey, and their effect can incentivize folks to vote out of fear or for strategic reasons. So do you think if we were to try to achieve kind of a fairer election where people vote for who they actually want to be elected, regardless of how other people are voting or what their chances are of getting into office, do you think that could be accomplished if we banned polls or...
I'm absolutely opposed to banning polls. I mean, first of all, it's a freedom of speech issue.
Right.
And you better have a good reason for that. And what you've put together is a kind of a tissue of weak considerations. That's the first thing I'd say. The second thing is the meaning of whom you really want to vote for. We have a first-past-the-post system in Vancouver. Mm-hmm. No, there can be only one mayor, for starters, right? So right away. It's a single-member district as far as the mayor is concerned, and probably unlikely that we would get into polling about council because there's just too many TAM councillors. But thinking of the mayor here, people may have concrete preferences for this party over that party or this candidate over that candidate, but there's a sort of general orientation, you know, kind of pro-anti-developer, pro-anti-density, stuff like that. So you have an overarching orientation, but there's more than one candidate who represents that orientation. And you may not actually have much concrete information about which of those candidates is actually closer to you. I mean, honestly, Kennedy Stewart, Shauna Sylvester, you know, I see them as largely interchangeable on policy grounds, and I don't actually have a strong basis for differentiating amongst them in terms of, say, their real experience or ability. But let's just say one or the other of them would be acceptable and none of the others would be. Under those circumstances, I'm probably going to pay attention to poll information. And it's a perfectly rational thing to do.
Right.
If you had a different ballot, right? If, for example, you had a preferential ballot where you were given the option of ranking all the candidates for mayor, such that if your first preference is not viable, you have some reasonable prospect that your ballot will then be assigned to your second preference, who may be viable and certainly more acceptable to you than all the alternatives. In that situation, you can be completely sincere. But in the kind of system that we're working with, sincerity is the road to perdition.
Right, but isn't sincerity...
You actually do have to pay attention.
Right, but isn't sincerity also sort of synonymous with saying fairer, like a fairer election where people are voting for who they actually want? Like, would our election be fairer if we had a preferential or proportional representation system on the municipal level?
Well, proportional representation would mean nothing in the selection of the mayor. In the direct election of a mayor, it's a single member district. It's a single office. So the fairer thing there, I would say, is a preferential ballot. You have an inescapably majoritarian choice. There can be only one winner. Now, if you're talking about council, that's a different story, right? Council has 10 seats, and that's a situation where you could actually start talking about divvying up the vote or divvying up what might otherwise be big coalitions into, or big tents into smaller ones that could then get together for policy purposes. But that's about a multi-member body like council, parks board, or school board. And I actually think there's a strong argument for proportional representation there, provided that you have room for independence. But it is the case that in Vancouver, we do have a party system. It may be in flux, but we've had parties in municipal politics for a long time. And where you have real parties, then you can actually start talking about proportional representation. That would be fairer in the sense that there would be a cleaner relationship, a more proportionate relationship between the kind of depth of sentiment on the ground and its representation in the council. But that's another phone call.
Right. Absolutely. So I guess just in this election, with polls that we have available to us, it will likely influence who is voted in for our mayor, as it is a single person office, as you said. And so moving forward, if we want to give our electorate more accurate information, we would want to have more credible pollsters and better coverage of the polls through media outlets.
I agree with almost all of what you say. I think in terms of the impact of the polls, it's a potential, right? Mm-hmm. It's entirely conceivable that the polls are merely just reflecting a reality and not further shaping it. We do know, however, I mean, I've done quite a bit of work on this, actually, that when you get these in parliamentary context, for example, where you have parties competing for the same voters, there is often an impact, or there can be, and there certainly often has been, an impact from poll-type information somewhere.
Right.
May not always actually be from the right place, but people do take it into account.
Right.
It's in the nature of a first-past-the-post system that this will happen.
Right. Well, thank you so much, Professor Johnston. I appreciate your time.
Okay, you're welcome.
Thank you for listening. This episode was edited and researched by Alex DeBoer and brought to you by CITR's News Collective. Seeking Office is brought to you by CITR's News Collective and produced by Alex DeBoer. Our theme music is by Artem Bemba. Thank you for listening.